Are you ready to live a more meaningful and passionate life? Through the principles of heart living, you'll delve into new theories, discover life wisdom, and achieve greater balance. Become inspired. Tune in to Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, international life coach and practitioner who's helped thousands transform their lives. Part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff will lead you on a remarkable journey of the heart.
Welcome to the Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff show. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host. You're listening to a live Dream Vision 7 radio network broadcast at 1510 AM NBC Sports Radio Boston, heard live every first Sunday at 7 p.m. You can also tune in to my show on our station Dream Vision 7 Radio every week, Wednesday through Friday, at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. To learn more and for a full station schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Well, greetings and welcome to our March show. Our topic this evening is Minding the Temple of Your Spirit, Understanding Your Body's Wisdom. Now, whether you deny or, we should say, celebrate your body is your vehicle while you're here on Earth, and it is considered an Eastern energy medicine, particularly in China and Japan, to hold a record of all your earthly experiences. So on our show today, we'll explore views about the body, and I'm going to focus on this Eastern view. I teach in Japan, and I teach studies such as body-mind energy medicine, Reiki at all levels, and Reiki, by the way, is a Japanese healing method, as well as I teach intuition and heart living classes. And I also perform many energy sessions in Japan and also, of course, in the United States. I'm very excited at the timing of this show because I'm going to be leaving this week for Japan and teaching there until the end of March. You can follow my journey to Japan on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/heartliving. So today, much of what I will cover in this hour comes from Eastern ideas in the view of the body and energy medicine, as well as some interesting ideas from my own practice of, I guess at this point, close to 15 years, both in the U.S. and abroad. And, you know, the body and health in general is one of the arenas in which we can learn a great deal about ourselves, but really a great deal about the world. So during this hour, we'll look at how, from an Eastern concept, the body is considered to be an energy tool of the soul. And because it's believed that the body does speak the mind, and this gives you a whole different view probably than what you may have heard before, although some of you may have heard that the body actually speaks the mind. We're also going to discuss illness and symptoms of the body, and it just in general what they might mean from that point of view. So I think a good place to start is with a quick idea about the Western view of the body and how it contrasts with the Eastern view before we move more fully into the Eastern understanding. Now, from a more typical Western view, we would understand that the body is more like a machine. So we feed it, clothe it, exercise it, and we treat our body as symptoms arise. You know, in Western medicine, we may remove parts that are diseased or don't work any longer, and we may medicate it to treat illness or symptoms. And while there are certainly exceptions to this, the typical Western emphasis is said to be more often on outside causes, such as germs or the idea that too much stress from the outside breaks the body down and so on. Now, I sincerely, at least in my own experience and in experiences of others whom I'm close to, I really believe that the Western view is changing to include more integrative concepts. Sometimes we call it alternative care, and it certainly is an alternative care, but more and more people who do energy work like to think of it as integrative rather than alternative, because you can certainly use these different kinds of care with Western medicine. And no doubt Western medicine has worked wonders in many cases. You know, consider transplants, laser surgery, antibiotics, and so on. And as people accept integrative methods, a greater understanding of the body as connected to the mind and the spirit is really coming about, a greater idea of body-mind-spirit balance. But this overall, more traditional body-as-a-machine concept, we know also is not that effective. You know, drugs can have serious side effects. People can become dependent upon external treatments. The cause underlying the illness may not be understood. Let's say a person may be medicated instead of being asked to feel something, you know, or allowed to feel. So if a person, for example, were undergoing depression, and not to say they shouldn't take a medication given certain circumstances or if there's a chemical imbalance, But if a person is medicated, instead of deciding to allow themselves to feel, they may make very different choices in their lives. Now, interestingly, I've also studied Native American culture, and an exception in the U.S. can be found in Native American culture, because the doctor of the body in Native American concepts is considered the doctor of the soul. And in that view, there is no separation of body and soul. The idea is that the body houses a person's soul issues through, in some cases, different lifetimes. You know, that's a belief, as well as one's generational patterns. And when you hear the words generational patterns, you might be thinking, you know, what does that mean? But it's believed that there can be a cellular history that can take place through families. And one of my certifications is in shamanism, which is, of course, Native American in origin, at least in my training. So now in Eastern medicine, to go back to that, it is similar in a certain way to Native American in that your body is seen as a living temple of your spirit. And what I love when I'm in Japan is that they say it's an archive of your memories. Your body is, not only from this lifetime, but of course they do believe in reincarnation, and they believe that it is from many lifetimes. So as an energy practitioner in Japan, and also I have 5 certifications in different forms of integrative care, I've learned a tremendous amount about the Eastern view of the body. And from this view, your body is not just a tool of your soul, it is an energy system. And in Eastern medicine, it really is based on detailed maps of energy that flow throughout the body. So illness is recognized then as a form of an imbalance, or I guess you could say a blockage in the flow of energy in the body. And balance is achieved then through adjusting this energy flow. Outside causes, as well as internal causes and circumstances, are all looked at and considered. And this would include what was going on in the person's mind, for example, that could have created the illness, their emotional state, their meridians or flows of energy in the physical body, as well as the external stressors and conditions. Physical sickness is considered then not to be just something of the body, but it's considered to be related to the body, again, the mind and the spirit. And this holistic view puts really a sacred face on healing. At least I like to think of it like that. And it offers a multidimensional approach not only to understanding the body, but also the body and the mind and healing itself. Now, in Japan, we use this analogy. We say, consider that your body is a palace and your heart is the emperor. And it's believed there that all your organs are actually reporting to your heart. So if, for example, you have a gallbladder issue, in Western theory, the emphasis might be to focus on diet and perhaps to remove the gallbladder. But from an Eastern view, part of the treatment, at least, would include asking questions. And interestingly, the question there would be, what might you not be letting your heart feel? Because your heart is actually considered the first lieutenant, the gallbladder is considered the first lieutenant to the heart. You see, your gallbladder is the controller of all your decision-making and planning. And so they would ask, you know, has that been excessive? Are you worried? Are you not allowing yourself to feel? And you see, all of this would be considered important in that diagnosis. So a treatment plan then might include, besides discussing it, might include acupuncture. And acupuncture is intended to direct different flows throughout the meridians or energy flows of the body. Reiki, which is what I teach there and in the United States, a hands-on healing form. And it may include other kinds of treatments, including castor oil packs and so on. But treatment of body, mind, and spirit would be in order rather than, okay, we have this one diseased organ and we need to remove it. So let's also look at a concept that's always been a great visual for me in my own understanding, and I like to use it in my teaching. When I teach about the body, I like to begin with just a really basic idea, and I suggest that your body's like a tube of toothpaste with the cap on tight, and if it's pressed and forced, paste will come out of the weakest place in that tube. So in a person, this weak place could end up being the digestive system, immune system, it could be the kidneys, the lungs, and so on, and if it's pushed down and held, this particular tube, where this, you know, nothing can come out, well, then that can create depression, illness, addiction, and just countless other possibilities, forms of anxiety, and so on. So you have to remember that the body, again, is based on flows of energy throughout all the organs and all the energy centers, And again, these flows are called meridians, which really just means pathways of energy. Now, illness results then if there is an imbalance or if there's a blockage in the flows of energy that are moving throughout the body. And these blockages can be created in part because of issues of the mind, certainly the emotions and the spirit. So illness is a problem of the whole person, not just a problem related to some aspect of the body. And for example, let's say you exercise regularly and you do eat well, but you're in a destructive or an abusive relationship, or let's say your workplace is toxic. While your health may be at risk or may be affected as a result of these variables, actually just as much, if not more, than eating well or not exercising would be. And you have to pay attention to the power of your mind because, again, your body is speaking your mind. And the mind can make the body sick, and it can also make the body well. So your mind's critical to what's going on in your body. And all our illnesses are meaningful, too. At various times when I'm working with people, I teach them that this illness, for example, could be designed to teach them something to get their attention. You know, it's interesting, you can look at the language that we use around our bodies and our lives and illness itself, because people make statements like, it was a pain in the neck, or I couldn't stomach it, or it got under my skin, you know. So we use it in our language, and I think if you pay attention from that perspective, you'll see how it is really related. It's also believed that symbolically we have throat issues when we're not able to speak up for ourselves, or we may experience migraines, for example, if we're not letting something that's in our hearts go into our minds. So the symptom or the illness itself can be a symbol simply for something deeper. So in other words, there are multidimensional meanings to illness and to symptoms. And sometimes illness gives us an opportunity to change something in our lives. Maybe we decide because of an illness that, for example, we have to ask for help. You know, I have had clients before who are excellent caregivers, and they become ill, and then they have to be cared for, or they have to slow their lives down. And in doing that, they finally may discover what's really important to them. So it really does become their teacher. And I've definitely had this experience in working with people who have cancer. Almost always the person encounters a wake-up call from the soul, and adjusting their response to their lives is important in order to include the ability to receive or even just to figure out what really matters to them. So when illness arises from an Eastern point of view, the challenge is regarded as a gift. And it's as though the blockage that has occurred in the body that has created the illness may stand for more than it just appears to, that it could hold a kind of symbolic meaning. And remember, balance is sought through adjustment in the energy flow. So to address these blockages that are occurring, the practitioner would have to look at perhaps causes of the blockages. Blockages in the flow could occur for a number of reasons, one of which is that we can hide our emotions in our bodies. You know, if you have emotions arise like sadness or anxiety, fear, anger, and so on, and you don't express your feelings, and instead you repress or just deny your feelings, it's thought that the emotion will stay in your body or in your cell tissue, and in that way it does create a blockage in the energy flow. Have you ever had a sad feeling, for example, tried not to feel it and sort of shoved it back down into your body? You just didn't let it get past your throat, and in doing that, I mean, I've done that, so I know when I've done it, I've noticed a lump in my throat as a result. But that is really a perfect example of blocked energy. And we learn to do this often through the ways we're parented. Let's say you were raised in an abusive household where your feelings weren't allowed, or maybe they just weren't honored. You know, you probably suppressed a lot of emotion. And then your physical safety may have depended on correctly reading the energetic climate that you lived in. You probably learned to use your body as a detector of your environment, while your own feelings may have been suppressed most of the time or just blocked. You know, we can stash great pain behind intellectual armor, too. Many bright children learn to hide in their minds. And when parents don't allow the child a full form of expression, this may contribute to the child's future ability not to be able to express. So they become an adult and can't express, which, of course, we know can create health issues. And yet another idea is that we may have been taught that our bodies and many of our natural feelings just plain weren't acceptable. So then we can set up a lot of complex distortions about our bodies. You know, we may just have an illusion about our body. let's say we decided that we were too fat or too thin based on some sort of external view that we were told. So if we felt unsafe at all, then, as I had mentioned in a previous show, we probably created masks that we hoped would protect us or at least allow us to be accepted, you know, by the outside world. So now how does this all tie in with the body and healing? Well, one Eastern approach that we work with in Japan and working with our bodies involves energy release. And it's believed that the cells in the body hold the energy of old emotional responses that may have been felt or not felt. And when I say felt or not felt, particularly traumas, either from the past in this lifetime or, again, because they do believe in reincarnation, even in other lifetimes. And this concept of cellular memory, and that's really what this is called, as it exists in the body, it's believed that reinforced negative thoughts and memories and these unreleased traumas are actually imprinted in the tissue. Kind of think of it as though they've been stamped in clay. You know, it's that kind of idea. So the patterns then in the mind and in the body are very important to consider. They also suggest that we have genetic tendencies within the body towards certain illnesses, you know, physical manifestations and so on. And in Eastern medicine, this is thought of as the language of the family, so to speak. And I've always loved that notion, you know, the language of the family. That really feels right to me when I learned that and when I hear that. And before we go much further, let me mention a few terms that are commonly understood and referred to in the Asian view. The first is incarnation. Now, the word incarnation means embodiment, literally, and it covers a lot of issues around the process of coming into a lifetime. So the idea is that we have many lifetimes and that we take on a body, we're born, and then that particular lifetime helps us to evolve our soul. So whatever your religious orientation, I'm certainly not suggesting that you need to believe in reincarnation. I'm just sharing that in Asian medicine, this belief does exist. And in this theory, it is believed that our soul's evolution is like a string of pearls. And this, again, is just a beautiful analogy to me because each pearl on that necklace is a lifetime. Now, obviously, there are many lifetimes in their culture, and so there are many pearls. And each lifetime serves to advance the growth and development of the person's soul. And we may not know, for example, why the luster of a pearl is a certain way. That is, you know, if we looked at that pearl independently, or you could say we have the issues we have in that lifetime and we look at our lifetime independently, if we were to do that, we would simply have to trust that all the pearls are as they need to be in the greater evolution of our soul. And here's an important point in this theory that I find interesting and also really moving. Each of our lifetimes is necessary for us to experience life and to learn love. So the belief then is essentially we're here to learn the human condition. That's actually our goal in being here on Earth. We're here to be each other's teachers. We came in to learn love. And so in each incarnation or lifetime, the lifetime is contributing to the whole of our soul's journey. And from this view, the soul itself is that which is beyond the being in human form. So it's believed that the reason to incarnate, or again, to come into the world in another lifetime, is actually coming as a drive from the soul. And our soul, in their belief, is connected to the divine spirit, which is overseeing the process of evolution on a different plane of consciousness. I mean, I just love that. I really love that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm just so enamored with the Asian medicine. It just makes sense to me. Now, we also have an ego and a higher self, and the ego might be considered, in some ways, people call it your personality self, but at any rate, it's the part of us that allows us to know ourselves as being separate from others, and that in contrast to the higher self assists us in evolving into wholeness or perfection. The higher self is an aspect of us that believes in our unity with all. And now, given that, then, what about the body? Well, the body is a garment that you have in this lifetime to carry your spirit. And one of the things they say is that if you needed a different body, you certainly would have been given a different body, but that's the body you needed. So despite the fact that you like or dislike your body, you know, there's this idea that it is the perfect vehicle. Again, it's a vehicle for you to learn the human condition and to learn love. So as I mentioned before, it's a record of your earthly experiences. It's considered, you might say, a library of everything that's happened. You know, every joy, every trauma, everything's left a little imprint on that clay we were talking about. And again, I just find Eastern views fascinating. Now, we also know that we are the products of our parents' bodies. So if we take that into consideration, you know, we know, okay, we look like our parents, and often we have similar health problems as our parents or other ancestors. Think about the color of your hair, eyes, skin, your bone structure, and so on. Much of that is similar to your ancestors. Well, some of our health problems are also a result, then, of both our recent and ancient lineage of our ancestors. So it's believed, then, that memories are housed not just in our minds, but in every cell of our bodies. And an added understanding, then, is to recognize that our cells also contain the memories of our ancestors. It's as though you're here to heal your ancestral lineage as well as your own in this viewpoint. Now, in an interesting way, another analogy I like to use in Japan and also here in the U.S. is just to say, like, car manufacturers create new models based on a history of designs, and we're the latest model of our ancestry. So, you know, that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. But we hold the cellular history of our present life in this body, and we also have living histories in ourselves from our ancestors in our previous lifetimes. And an illustration could be that when an ancestor experienced something traumatic, that the memory was stored and held down at a cellular level, and that the memory in some way could be passed on to other family members if it's not resolved. So again, in shamanic practice and also in this Eastern tradition, when you are working to heal yourself in a certain kind of way, you're also healing your lineage, which again I just find fascinating. And in some Native traditions especially, it's understood that when this, and I love the way they say it, they say the story of the cells is heard. So when the story of the cells is heard, the cells release the stored trauma they've been holding on to and are able to rejoin the organism that they're part of. It's kind of like saying they're able to just get on with the business of living. And this makes energetic release so important for healing. The person receiving the release really doesn't have to be totally conscious of what was released or even hold a mental vision of exactly what the trauma was. The practitioner simply assists in the release of cellular memory through energetic technique, like hands-on healing, breathing, and so on. And in addition to this energy work, understanding the larger picture of your body then and your cellular health can free you of illness and can actually help you to heal the lineage limitations. Now, we're going to take a break in just a moment, and when we come back, we'll get more into this, but it is time for a break. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, live with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio Boston. And we will be back for further tips on making the most of working with your body. So to call in during our second half of the show, the local number is 617-237-1234, the toll-free number 866-338-9663. Again, that's 866-338-9663. Thank you.
Are you ready to live a more meaningful and passionate life? Through the principles of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, International Life Coach and Energy Medicine Practitioner, you'll delve into new theories, discover life wisdom, and achieve greater balance. Become inspired. Connect with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff through her Dream Vision 7 radio show, Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. Visit Cynthia's website at heartliving.com and like her Facebook page at facebook.com/heartliving for inspiration and guidance. Cynthia has helped thousands transform their lives. Let her lead you on a remarkable journey of the heart.
Join us every second and fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. for Living on Purpose with Carolyn Romano, where we explore the mysteries, meaning, and sometimes madness of life. Let's figure out together the ways we're meant to serve and become the fullest expressions of our most authentic selves. Let's figure out together how to create lives of balance, abundance, and joy. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Are you ready to be who your soul wants you to be? Join Lynn McGonigal, the founder of the Lightworkers Healing Method, as she and her amazing guests show you how to move into a life of lasting joy. Miracles happen every second Sunday at 6 p.m. right here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Hasn't your soul already waited long enough?
107 Radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio Boston. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, host of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. You can call in during the second half of the show by calling the local number 617-237-1234 or toll-free 866-338-9663. Now, before we took the break, we were talking about a person receiving a release and what that would be about in regard to releasing trauma. So in addition to energy release work, understanding the larger picture of your body and cellular health can really free you of illness and lineage limitations. For example, some healing traditions suggest that understanding the symbolic reason why an illness is happening or has happened can be enough to release the cause and to promote the healing. And in this way, it's believed that the evolution of your health and your soul is more than a personal journey and a personal responsibility. It's seen more as a collective journey, that we belong to a group of souls and that we're actually helping to heal each other. And again, that's something that I think is so such a great concept. Now, a wonderful exercise that you can do to help yourself and your relationship to your body would be to explore some questions. I love to use these in classes, and one is just, what do you know about your lineage? You know, you can start with your family of origin, explore some main body-mind issues. You can look at your ancestors' lives, their illnesses, their traumas, issues, and so on. And also, how were body and mind issues brought forward, for example, in you or in your generation? Or how might a generation of people be trying to heal an old pattern would be another way to look at that. So that pattern, by the way, could be physical, but it can also be mental. It could be spiritual and emotional. For example, in the case of depression, let's say, or mental illness, diabetes, cancer, or what if someone has a neurological disease? Perhaps the current generation is actually healing afflictions that were also of past generations. You know, our mind holds our awareness of the larger picture of our personal and ancestral stories. So by asking these questions, by thinking them through, and even just thinking through enough to change our mind, I mean, if you believe that if we can change our mind, we can change our life, and that's a pretty common theory anymore, and certainly one I believe. An additional idea that you could be thinking about then is, if you can change your mind, you can change your life. Well, if you can change your mind, you can also change your body. And instead of limiting our ideas to just our own physical bodies and experiences, we can align our mind with the universal mind, or what I like to call the greater universal healing mind. Now, this consciousness understands that all healing is possible, okay, so that, you know, miracles can be commonplace, and that we're more likely to heal when we're in a state of love rather than fear. And by the way, manifestations of fear would look like anger, sadness, depression. I mean, anger is a form of fear, but it's actually one that's expressed outwardly, whereas depression is kind of like anger turned back in on yourself. So, you know, looking at emotions, and you see, your body is always going to be reflecting what's happening in your life. You're going to tend to get sick more easily when you're not present in your body. It tends to get more blocked when you're fearful, when you're anxious. And a commonly held perspective in holistic medicine is that the body gets sick to get your soul's attention. Healthy people usually have a dynamic and more acceptant and loving relationship with their world, but of course also with their bodies. So just to kind of look at self-image of your body and loving your body, I want you to think about four components. And again, when I teach these four. The first is visual. So ask yourself, you know, how do I see my body? So from a visual standpoint, how do I see my body? Now, the second component would be emotional, which is, how do I feel about my body? Again, how do I feel about my body? The third would be just movement. You know, how does my body move? How do I feel in my body, in my environment? And, of course, the fourth is historical. What messages have I received about my body, not only from your parenting or from what people have told you, but how does my ancestral history contribute to my body and also my health? So if you focus on these issues and work with them to heal and change your body image, it definitely can help you, especially if you have a faulty view or if you're just, you know, have an unhealthy image. So as we work to love our bodies, we also have to release old traumas, and that may contribute, that would certainly contribute to healing the blockages in your body. So another question that I want to talk about with you is, what is trauma? and you know, what is thought to happen in the body in regard to trauma, because this is important when we were talking earlier about cellular memory. A trauma in the cells can occur when life becomes unbearable for someone, or let's say you're having an experience and you just have to say no to the experience. So we may shut down, and if we shut down, we may lock in the experience of the trauma at a cellular level. It's not necessarily that we would do it consciously, but probably just a natural response to life at that moment. You know, it's really interesting when I learned that animals shake off trauma. If you've ever seen an animal get hurt, they will shake the body in order to shake off the trauma. But people generally do not shake off the trauma. They tend to hold the trauma in, which is why sometimes when I'm working with people, and I'm sure other practitioners have seen this too, when a person is releasing trauma, their body may need to shake. You know, they may actually shake. I mean, think of a nervous breakdown, and a person would be shaking or trying to shake off something, and often that something is some old pattern of trauma. And this response then of mental, emotional, and physical behavior, if you don't release, then it may result in ill health. So let's just say then that a blockage has been created. Well, as time goes on, anything that appears to be related to the original event of the trauma, anything that appears to be related, would just continue to be treated as negative, and would continue to be blocked. And we would go on then to create further armor, you know, to defend against any seeming negative similar experiences. And I have a certification in acupressure. Now, acupressure is not acupuncture, which is needles, but acupressure is using the fingers to touch specific points on the body. They are the same points as the acupuncture points. And in holding onto those points, I was trained to use certain patterns of energy to release blockages and improve flow. And what I love about it is that these different patterns are related to certain organs, and then you look for symptoms to figure out what you need to release. Well, sometimes when I'm doing that, I'll notice, I'll feel the point on the body, and it feels very armored, literally, to me, like it's, like the particular shoulder is so hard, rigid. And then as we get to work with the energy, it starts to soften. So that's just a great example of that idea. At any rate, what, you know, we go on to create this armor. So if, for example, a person has an experience, let's say I have an experience when I'm 2 years old that involves a near drowning, for example, I may not be consciously aware of that experience. Like, in other words, I can't recall it, but my body is going to remember it. And I may find myself frightened by water, boats, situations, you know, that would involve that possibility that are related to the original event, or situations that might make me feel as though it could be replicated, because again, my cell tissue is holding on to the memory. So in Japan this week, I'll be using another analogy that I think helps people to understand. And I like to use this analogy of a stream and a rock. Let's say you're standing in a flowing stream. Now, out of a state of fear that the stream is going to be too forceful or overwhelm you, you place a huge rock into the stream, and you think this is going to keep the flow of the stream from overwhelming you. But the water simply adjusts by flowing around the rock as much as it's able to, I should say. And in your body or your life, if this stream were a traumatic event, the rock becomes a blockage that wasn't there before, and the water, the flow is still going to continue to flow around it at its regular force, but think that the original flow itself is going to now be interrupted or changed, or you could even say there's going to be dammed up energy in one area of the body. This blockage can be something that creates emotional or mental or physical disharmony, or again, some sort of imbalance in the body. So the goal then of Eastern medicine is going to be, or integrative medicine, is to achieve balance or ease. Now, they term disease, you know, the word disease, D-I-S-E-A-S-E, they see it as D-I-S hyphen E-A-S-E. It's dis-ease. And what we're trying to do is bring ease back into the body. So by taking a closer look at the original experience and the story and the pattern that was created, you see, we can now begin to alter our patterns of living and responding to our bodies, and then we can begin to heal. So instead of continually trying to hold off a trauma, like we discussed earlier, we no longer resist the traumatic stress, and instead we try to work to understand it mentally. And yet we don't just do, not that there's anything wrong with psychotherapy, I'm a full believer in it, but not that we just do psychotherapy, rather, you know, understand it mentally, that is, or coaching or whatever, we allow ourselves to engage in a kind of release where that release becomes both mental, physical, emotional, and energetic. So a healthy integration, then, of our body, mind, and spirit would include some kind of integrative energy work. And you see, the integrative energy work is going to help reunite the person with parts of themselves that might have been locked up or, say, frozen in the body, and allow the flow of energy to balance and heal that area. And this healing process would work at both a physical and a mental level. The first is it's going to be an energetic technique at a physical, energetic, and cellular level. And the second, it would try to understand the associated story. So through that form of technique, I would help the person try to witness the story again as much as they wanted to or were able to. But here's the key. They have to change attachment to the old story. You could say the person knows that holding on to the old story is going to continue to replicate the painful memory. So the old story has to be released, and attachment to it has to be released. Now, when we come back from our next break, I'll tell you a little more about how that's handled in Native American culture and just a few tips on what you can be doing. So it's time for a break. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, live with Green Vision 7 Radio Network, 1510 AM, NBC Sports Radio, Boston. We will be back for further tips and to call in during our second half of the show, local numbers 617-237-1234, or again, toll free, 866-338-9663. Thank you.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters, all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Maximum Success, the Coach Bruce Show. You'll learn success strategies to take your game to the next level from performance consultant John Brubaker. Maximum Success explores why winners win and teaches you the keys to peak performance. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
The Massachusetts Soldiers Legacy Fund, MSLF, was founded in 2004 with a simple goal: to provide educational assistance grants to the children of Massachusetts service members who were killed while deployed on operations enduring an Iraqi freedom. With its current resources, the MSLF guarantees a minimum of $40,000, $10,000 per annum, in educational funding to each child of a fallen service member whose home of record at the Department of Defense was Massachusetts. There's no selection process. If an individual is a child of a service member whose service is credited to Massachusetts and whom gave his or her life in Operation Enduring or Iraqi Freedom, that child qualifies for MSLF funds. We're proud to report that we're accomplishing our founding objective thanks to the support of individuals and organizations throughout the United States. To donate, go to mslfund.org.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Bovee on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday, 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Are you ready to live a more meaningful and passionate life? Through the principles of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, International Life Coach and Energy Medicine Practitioner, you'll delve into new theories, discover life wisdom, and achieve greater balance. Become inspired. Connect with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff through her Dream Vision 7 radio show, Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. Visit Cynthia's website at heartliving.com and like her Facebook page at facebook.com/heartliving for inspiration and guidance. Cynthia has helped thousands transform their lives. Let her lead you on a remarkable journey of the heart.
Greenlock is the place to go for horse therapy you should know. We use the horse, they do the trick, to help you talk and walk and skip. The horse's movement builds your muscle. It also makes you laugh and chuckle. To do our job, your help we need. To run the farm and buy our feed. To help us out, just double click on greenlock.org. Do it quick.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. You're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio live broadcast here at 1510 AM NBC Sports Radio Boston. I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, host of Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. You can call in during this next part of the show, the local number 617-237-1234 or toll free 866-338-9663. And I believe we have a caller. So if there's a caller on the line, you can go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Cynthia. I'm Jody.
Hi, Jody.
I'm really enjoying your show, and what you're talking about is really appropriate for my life right now.
Okay.
I know that I would benefit from giving, you know, much more care and attention to my body, but somehow I resist doing it, and I just can't do whether it's walking or exercising or trying to do any kind of structured routine. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions as to how I can do that and stay committed to it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jody. I'm so glad you called in, and I really do appreciate your question because, honestly, in my practice, I have many people who ask that very question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you're really referring to is how might you have greater self-discipline to
yes.
be able to hold a structure.
Yes.
Is that right, Jody?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And, of course, this self-discipline would help you to achieve your goal. Now, it sounds like you're aware of the need to exercise and move your body, or you wouldn't be asking the question.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And you're willing to do it sort of, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The mind is willing, but the flesh is weak.
I gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, somehow, it's bringing the willingness into action.
Right.
You know, and that's
right.
what it sounds like to me the idea
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
So,
that, okay. yes, exactly.
Okay. Now, well, it helps to look at our mental ideas about structure because we can be totally aware that we need to do something and then just not be committed to the actual application itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, awareness is one thing, willingness is another thing. And you've sort of got to act on what you know, or I always like to say, your knowledge is not complete unless you act on what you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I want to tell you something I heard years ago, and that is that the word discipline, even though we give it such a bad rap, it actually comes from the Latin root disciple, and all it actually means is to grasp. So discipline itself is really what's going to allow you to grasp something so that it becomes your own. And really, the discipline is kind of a lifeline that can lead you out of the chaos.
Right.
So the problem is that often our lives are full of structure. So, you know, I don't know what kind of work you do, but you probably have a lot of commitments already. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Okay. So then if that's the case, you may resist additional structure. See, a lot of times people have so much structure that exercising, walking, whatever, just feels like one more thing. And many people stay in their minds and talk themselves out of making an application that they're aware that they want to do, like you mentioned, going to the gym, walking, and so on. Now, personally, I'm just going to tell you what's worked for me because, you know, some people love to go to the gym. Some people love to do the walking. I actually do like walking. But for the most part, I have long days, and often it's hard to add an extra structure. And so if you can keep your structure very simple, that helps a lot. You know, for years I walked my dog in the evening. Now, if I'd listened to my mind, I would say to myself, I'm too tired, I've worked too hard, I don't have the energy tonight. But what I did do is I committed to walking her at 7 o'clock each evening. And again, very simple structure. I actually got myself a watch that had an alarm on it, and when it went off at 7, of course, my dog would tell me if I didn't remember, but I picked up the leash and just walked the dog. I did not think about it for a minute. I didn't think whether I wanted to do it, didn't want to do it. I knew, one, it helped the dog, but also, really, it was helping me, too. So if you can keep the simple structure around your commitment, don't give yourself too much leeway to change it, and then also keep the end result of your goal at the forefront of your mind. Have an accountability partner. That can be helpful.
Yes.
And, you know, I think what happens is we want immediate gratification. We have to adjust our mindset to having delayed gratification through a kind of self-discipline like I was describing. You can sort of let yourself know, you know, I'm putting off something that's going to give me a temporary feeling of pleasure in the moment, like lying down instead of walking, in order to obtain something else that eventually, hopefully, is going to give me something deeper and more lasting in terms of my well-being. I hope that helps, Jody. Does that sound like that makes sense to you?
It does, and keeping it simple is a very good idea for me. Absolutely.
Okay. Good. Well, I really wish you the best, and good luck, and thanks so much for calling in.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so before we took the break, and I'm so glad Jody called in. Thank you, Jody, for doing that. But what I realize is that when we start to look at how then can we take the story that we have, you know, and how do we let it go? You know, the most interesting idea that I learned in Native American healing methods is that the council, this council of elders, will listen to your story three times, and then they actually turn their back on you. Now, at first when I heard that, I thought, wow, you know, that's kind of scary. But you see, it doesn't help you to continue telling and living that same story, no matter how horrible it was, how true it was. And they claim that you have to let it go and call your soul back. And again, that's exactly how they say it, because otherwise you remain a victim. So through higher consciousness, learning more, understanding more, we can challenge our illusions about death and disease and aging. And every cell in the body will become reinformed then about life as we shift our mental understanding. And it's believed that as we do experience this process of release and generating new cells and all of that, our old wounds can begin to be released or reversed to healing. So again, it's really helpful to let go of the old story that created the memory. So now I want to mention a little more about how our memory affects our bodies. What if the original wound, let's just say this, that we're living out really isn't necessarily the result of a factual event? Let's say it may be the way things were perceived through the eyes of a child. And you see, at the time of an injury, all we really understand is that we're frightened and there's no way to survive in the moment by staying present in it. So we may shut down, we may check out, or even adopt a contrary behavior as a way to stay safe in that moment. And when the moment no longer exists in its original form, then we're going to continue the same pattern behavior to stay safe. Now, if as a child, for example, I had an alcoholic parent and I was never sure if that person would yell at me or hit me or, you know, do something harmful to me, I had to remain hypervigilant about my environment. And in that case, I may continue to perpetuate the need to be hypervigilant, even though my parent is no longer present. I could even attract another person into my life as an adult, or might even be a workplace situation, that would cause me to have to keep that pattern going, because without it, I may not feel alive. So you see, we can suffer from our own, you know, history, but also from ancestral wounds that have been passed down from one generation to the next. And no matter if it's the Holocaust, the Great Depression, or a family historical event, we can actually inherit a set of beliefs from our wounded ancestors that we end up adopting for our own. So again, in energy medicine, this is considered a kind of generational soul loss. Isn't that interesting? That there's a feeling of soul loss in terms of the generation, and that that soul loss can be handed down from one generation to the next. So children then could encounter and live out issues that they didn't even experience in their own lifetimes, even though they suffer from, say, depression or fear or judgment as a result. So again, interestingly, in holistic methods, it is believed that similarly we can bring with us from a former life a personal wound into the lifetime. And in that case, let's say we were abandoned by a parent or lover or trapped in an ambush, you know, or something in a previous lifetime, the unfinished dynamic could come into the current lifetime. So, you know, it could be played out again with the same partner or another partner, because go back to Asian concepts. The belief is that we incarnate each time with a soul group and play roles in each other's dramas for purposes of, again, remember, learning love and the human condition. Now, what about the overall symbolism of the body? I'm going to give you three quick things and let you know that a future show of mine is going to cover this. But quite simply, it's believed in Asian work and in integrative care that the bones and symptoms and illnesses related to the bones reflect something about the soul. So if you have a bone issue, there's something about the soul. Muscles and ligaments and tendons reflect issues dealing with the mind. You know, think of a stiff neck or you just couldn't feel your feelings, some kind of rigidity. Fluids in the body symbolize issues of emotion. Again, in a future show, I want to go into greater depth explaining the parts of the body and specifically what illness in certain parts of the body might mean. And if you have a specific area of interest in that regard, feel free to email me at heartliving@cox.net. Again, my website is heartliving.com, and you could go there and easily email me from there. But for now, what would be some basic things that you can do? Well, you know, one principle is to know that life is movement. Just become aware of movement in and around your body. Because when you're feeling fragmented, in pain, disconnected from your spirit or your body, one of the most effective tools you can have is through movement. The tendency for many people is to shut down, and they'll say things like, I'm too tired to exercise. You know, I love Jody's question for that reason, because that is really a question I get frequently. You know, or it hurts to move, I don't have energy, that kind of thing. But it is movement that releases and revitalizes the body. So commit to movement, Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, in addition to other kinds of movements, and something as simple as walking. You know, all of these are so helpful. Fear is just non-movement. Fear is like paralysis. So even an antidote to fear is to move. So a second principle might be that chronically negative mental and emotional states are causing stress on your body. So again, change your mind. Change your mind, change your body. You know, change your mind and body, change your life. These are all important things to do. Let's see. I think my time is almost up. So let me just say this. Again, you can follow my, or you have an invitation, rather, to follow my trip to Japan by going to facebook.com/heartliving. And thank you for allowing me to spend this hour with you. I do encourage you to visit my website at heartliving.com. I have a weekly blog. I have a new product, a set of divination cards, and there will be new online classes that will be coming soon. But most of all, I hope that you promise yourself that you will open and lead from your heart, because it is so important. And, you know, what you don't express really becomes blockage in the body, and you can learn to express things in a much healthier way. So that not only healthier for those around you, but also healthier for yourself. And I really look forward to our April program. Again, I'm Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, your host for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, live with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, 1510 NBC Sports Radio Boston. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff. Join us the first Sunday evening of every month at 7 p.m. to explore ways to live a more inspired and passionate life. Gain clarity, balance, and purpose as Cynthia guides you on an enlightening journey of personal transformation. For more information, find Cynthia at her website, heartliving.com, or on Facebook, facebook.com/heartliving.